So we're going to open up God's Word, if you will, to Isaiah chapter 52. Isaiah chapter 52. Isaiah, kind of right in the middle of the Bible, but if you don't have that Bible or you're unfamiliar with it, we will have it on the screen in just a minute, beginning at verse 7. Isaiah chapter 52. It's interesting. This book is an interesting book, Isaiah. Isaiah, an interesting prophet in that, you might not know this, but I found it interesting indeed as I have studied this in the past, that Isaiah, unlike other prophets, is a prophet we know basically nothing about. We don't know where he was from. We don't know anything about his lineage. We really don't even know when he lived. The only thing we do know is the message of Isaiah. Was that me? Oh, it's all right. If somebody had a cell phone, that's cool. I thought that was like my cell or something, or Kelly. Kelly, yesterday we were, I'm not going to tell the story, but anyway, she's learning to turn her cell phone off. So Isaiah, she hates it when I point her out. Isaiah, an interesting prophet. What we do know, no details of his life, but we do know his message. And we know that this book is written during a captivity, basically just a few hundred years, a couple hundred years after Egyptian captivity, and they get freed from Egyptian captivity. Not too many years after that, all of the sudden, the Babylonians come and they take them all. Remember the story. Indeed, the king of his eyes were poked out and was a big, big deal. And they're completely divested. They burned down Jerusalem for all intents and purposes. And the children of Israel have nothing. They have nothing. And it's into this despair. It's into a world in which there's no hope. A world in which the children of Israel are held captive by an outside force that are enslaving them. It's into that world that this Isaiah, that we don't know anything about, speaks life and light to a desperate people. And I love that story because I love that fact because it's very much in keeping with our story that there was a day when we were desperate, enslaved, but a message came. And that message was a message of life, a message of hope, a message that helped to free us from chains. It's into this culture and into this despair that Isaiah writes. And I love these next few chapters. There are three songs in the latter part of this book, and they're called the Servant Songs. The Servant Songs, and they're songs, they're basically poems. They don't rhyme in English, but they rhyme thematically in the original language. These songs written to these people are songs of hope. The Servant Songs, talking about a servant that is to come, that's going to do something, that's going to bring life and light. The Servant Songs. And here we're jumping into the very last of these Servant Songs as we read this passage, verse 7, Isaiah chapter 52. How lovely on the mountains are the feet of him who brings good news. This is not a story about us going out. This is a story. This is a foretelling about a man in the person of Jesus who's going to come one day, and his feet are lovely because they bring and brought good news. That's the story. The servant king. How lovely on the mountains are the feet of him who brings good news, who announces peace, and brings good news of happiness. Who announces, I love this, because this is God's specialty. Who announces salvation. That's what God does best. Saves, redeems, makes better that which was broken, fixes, repairs broken hearts, broken situations. God announces salvation. Is that good news today? Is anybody else thankful for a God who is good enough but to bring good news? I've underlined it in my Bible. When God's word here says good news, it's the first time in all of God's word that we read it, these words, good news. We find it here first in Isaiah. I mean, Isaiah is a kind of heavy book. I mean, it's a really tough read. Like, Isaiah is calling the children of Israel out, but in the middle of sort of all the despair of Isaiah, there's a bright light, and for the first time, the Jews hear this word, good news. First time. The first time these words are used in God's word. Good news. Lovely on the mountains are the feet of him who brings good news, who announces peace and brings good news of happiness. Everybody here knows good news. You understand good news as opposed to bad news? We know bad news, and we know good news. I always like getting good news, you know? Okay, so the other day, it's funny. We were in the office, Kelly and I, and the cleaner, who's a great, great lady, we've invited her several times. She doesn't come here. Maybe she's Catholic. I don't know. We've invited her, but she said, hey, the other day, I was talking to, she also cleans, what is it? National. She cleans National. She was in the office of the vice president in National, and she was talking about this church and talking about the event that we did and how great it is that this church is serving and everything. And those people were like, oh, yeah, I know. We've heard a lot about that church. And isn't that great? We need more churches to do them. So that's really good. That's good news. But that wasn't the story I wanted to tell you. So the other day we were in there, and she said, oh, I heard something. I heard some people talking about your church. I'm like, oh, man. You know, because we were getting a lot of bad news. This was like 3-4 weeks ago. And what in the world? So she said, yeah, we were eating at the new restaurant on Wall Street, which is actually yummy. And she said we were eating there, and she was sitting at a table, and the table next to her were a whole bunch of people sitting there. I don't know, probably some people in this room, talking about how great they love our church. Those members of our church, she didn't know who it was, but just saying how great it is, how much they love our church, and I'm a little embarrassed to say that a lot of it was how much they love the pastor, and just talking about it. And I said, that's great, and kind of Kelly and I at the beginning were thinking, oh man, what new bad news are we going to get, you know? But indeed, it was good news. Hey, we should be commended. Thank you for whoever that was. I don't know who it was, but for speaking well of that. Other people heard that, and that's a good thing. It's a good testimony. God forbid that we're going to dinner and talking about how much they hate the message here. So God bless you for doing that. Good news. You get good news like Ohio State yesterday. Good news, right? Big, big time victory. Alabama won. Really good news. Michigan won. Everybody did really good. See, this is good news on a different level, though. So everybody loves good news, loves their team winning, loves when things happen that are happy. This is good news in a whole different kind of way. This is good news because what it says is God is gathering the shards and all the mess up of our life and bringing it back together to something that is new and healthy and good in Jesus. That's very, very good news. And it's what we celebrate when we celebrate communion. Indeed, the story continues. And I'm just going to read this because it's good news because of something that Jesus did. That good news isn't free. It's free to us, but it cost Jesus everything. That good news is good news because it's free, but it cost Jesus his life on the cross. Indeed, the last servant song, this last poetry piece, happens in Isaiah chapter 53, in which we see the suffering servant. The suffering servant. And this is important that we understand that Jesus suffered. Because while it is good news for us, it's good news not to be treated lightly. It's good news to be held up and honored and blessed because God did a lot for us in dying on the cross. And very poetically, in one of the great passages in God's Word, Isaiah 53, we'll read here, we'll read it all. The suffering servant, who has believed our message, verse 1, and to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? For he grew up before him like a tender shoot and like a root out of parched ground. He has no stately form or majesty that we should look upon him, nor an appearance that we should be attracted to him. He was despised and forsaken of men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief, and like one from whom men hide their face, he was despised, and we did not esteem him. As I read this, just if we can, just allow God's word to settle on our hearts, the gravity of all that Jesus did. Surely, verse 4, our griefs he himself bore, and our sorrows he carried. Yet we ourselves esteemed him stricken, smitten of God, and afflicted. He was pierced through for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. The chastening of our well-being fell upon him, and by his scourging we are healed. All of us like sheep have gone astray. Each of us has turned his own way, but the Lord has caused the iniquity of all of us to fall on him. He was oppressed, he was afflicted, and yet he did not open his mouth. Like a lamb that is led to slaughter and like a sheep that is silent before its shears, so he did not open his mouth. By oppression and judgment, he was taken away. And as for his generation who considered that he was cut off out of the land of the living for the transgression of my people, to whom that stroke was due, his grave was assigned with wicked men. And yet he was with a rich man in his death because he had done no violence, nor was there any deceit in his mouth. But the Lord was pleased to crush him, putting him to grief. If he would render himself as a guilt offering, he will see his offspring. He will prolong his days, and the good pleasure of the Lord will prosper in his hand. As a result of the anguish of his soul, he will see it and be satisfied. By his knowledge, the righteous one, my servant, will justify many, and he will bear their iniquities. Therefore, I will allot on him a portion with the great, and he will divide the booty with the strong, because he poured out himself to death and was numbered with the transgressors. Yet he himself bore the sin of many and interceded for the transgressors. The gospel that this prophet is preaching culminated or found its finishing product on Golgotha 2,000 years ago. A very real death foretold by this prophet. Real broken body, real shed blood. And it's because of that terrible news that we get to have good news. Jesus bore the sin for us. And he continues, and we'll conclude with this passage, Isaiah 55, as Isaiah continues to address us as we look at Jesus the servant. Isaiah 55 gives us these words, verse 1. Ho, everyone who thirsts, come to the waters. And you who have no money, come buy and eat. Come buy wine and milk without money and without cost. Why do you spend money for what is not bread, and your wages for what does not satisfy? Listen carefully to me and eat what is good, and delight yourself in abundance. Incline your ear and come to me. Listen, that you may live, and I will make an everlasting covenant with you. This is not talking about food. This is not talking about milk. This is not talking about honey. This is a prophet calling people to a change in direction. He's saying this because the suffering servant did what he did. We have a way that is free to get all of the blessings of God in the new covenant being Jesus' blood on the cross shed for us once and for all time, once and for everyone. No need for more bulls and goats and shed sacrifices of animals. Jesus created in his death on the cross a new covenant, a new agreement. And the thing is about this agreement is that it costs no money. You don't have to bring your stuff to it and sacrifice. The sacrifice has already been made. All you have to do is come. Come. It's very simple. And yet we're trying to pay for that with which we cannot buy. We cannot buy this covenant. You can't earn it. You can't deserve it. There's nothing in you that is ever going to be good enough. Jesus paid it all. And so the prophet says, everyone who thirsts, come to the waters. Spiritual thirst. Are you thirsty today? Come to Jesus. You need something that water's not going to help you with? Come to Jesus. If you have no money, that's the good news. We don't need money. Buy and eat. Hold on, how can you buy without money? It's free. You have no money. Buy and eat. Come buy wine and milk without money. All the riches. These are pictures of the richness of God's grace. This is not a bad deal that Jesus is offering us. It's rich. Is everybody awake? Why do you spend money for what is not bread? Why are you putting your time and energy into things that aren't eternal? What's the point in that? Why are we toiling for things that aren't going to last? Without money and without cost, why do you spend money for what is not bread and your wages for what does not satisfy? The world's very acquainted with trying to be happy and be full of joy. And they're spending their time and energy trying to fill themselves with something. And what Jesus offers is something that's free and so simple, and yet they reject Jesus. It's free. Come get. You know, people talk about we're closed-minded and what kind of God would, you know, there's a, well, the Muslims mean well and these people mean well. So, you see, so the thing is not meaning well has nothing to do with it. I mean, I guess meaning well is a good thing, but in God's eyes, meaning well is, it's, you know, what it is believing well. What it is putting your trust in the right place. And that's not narrow-minded. That's pretty broad brushstroke. Jesus is inviting everybody. That seem narrow to anybody in here? Jesus is inviting everybody. For free. No cost. Listen carefully to me and eat what is good. And I love this. Delight yourself in abundance. Everlasting, abundant life. This is Old Testament verbiage for what we know very well from the New Testament. This is about a life that is free, abundant, good, worth it. I have a feeling like maybe there's someone in this room that has not ever made that particular, and I hate to call it a decision, but has not decided to give your life to Jesus. I think that there may be somebody in here. I mean, statistically, maybe we could make this claim. If you've not come to the place where you've said, God, I give you my life in a very different way. And I talk about this a lot, and so I use the same sorts of illustrations a lot, but they help to illustrate clearly what we're talking about. What we're talking about is putting your faith in Jesus. What in the world does that mean? That means trusting Jesus. That means trusting Jesus. It's not any more complicated than that. It doesn't mean asking Jesus into your life so that you can go to heaven one day, or asking Jesus to come into your heart. Oh, because I don't even know what that means, but I know what this means. Trusting Jesus, I know what that means. Trust Jesus to take you to heaven when I die. That sounds really good, but how do you trust Jesus for something as big as forever and not trust Jesus for your life today? I'm talking about, have you put your faith, your trust in Jesus to be the God of your life such that He's guiding your life every day? Very simple. That's what trusting Jesus is. It's not complicated. We've complicated it. Have you put your trust, not believe in Jesus, have you put your trust in Jesus? That's a way of saying put your faith in Jesus, your trust in Jesus. If you haven't done that, I want to invite you into that process this morning. It is a good thing. Why? Because otherwise there's a big problem, and that is that you are going to be lost in your shattered, sin-cursed, sin-crushed life, and Jesus has a way out in the death on the cross that He gave through His blood. No other answer. It is what we are celebrating today. It is the great death of Jesus on a cross on our behalf. And I want to invite you today. If you haven't done that, I'm going to pray for you in just a moment. I'm going to ask that you would consider in your heart trusting Jesus with your life. For those that are believers today, you definitely know that you're a believer. You've put your faith in Jesus in a very substantive kind of way, in a real way. For those of you today, this is a call to taking more seriously what Jesus has done for us. Yes, it's good news. It's good news, but it came at a great cost. And it's not to be treated lightly. Indeed, it's to be shared. It's to be discussed, talked about. It's to be given in a way of invitation to people in your sphere of influence so that they can have an opportunity to receive Jesus as well. So this morning, if you're a believer today, a call to taking more seriously the great gift of Jesus and his salvation.